Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, we got playoff races heating up everywhere. Well, I guess some of them look like they're locked in, but some teams are fighting. Dallas Stars being one of them, right?
Yeah, no, it's playoff time, just like it would be in a normal year. Yeah. And you know how I know that, Dan? Because I'm normally gone from New Jersey, and I'm not. And so my allergies are horrendous. And I apologize to every listener in case I have to go to the quick dump on the mic or I sneeze while we're doing this, but I'm a mess.
Oh, that's great. I'm a mess. Clip it. I want to hear that one all the time on this podcast. I'm a mess. That clip right there. Look, I mean, it is. It's playoff time. We normally would be out and about, traveling around, covering playoffs. I hear so much talk about what a great matchup Florida-Tampa Bay would be. And yeah, it would be awesome, but it would be even better to be there in person, live, covering that series. It's the one a lot of people have wanted. Can't go right now, but that's all right. We still hope we get that matchup. Before we go any further, let's mention we will have Shane Doan on the podcast. We're lucky enough to talk to Doan. He's an all-timer, as you said in an email to us, Sean. You're right. He is an all-timer. He's the chief hockey development officer now with the Arizona Coyotes and recently named assistant GM for Team Canada at the World Championship. So we'll talk to Doan in a little while and we'll talk Coyotes with him and Team Canada as well. But I mentioned the Stars, Sean, and the Central Division, that Florida, Tampa Bay, Carolina at the top. But man, here comes Dallas. 4 wins in a row as we record this on Thursday afternoon. 6-0-2 in their past 8 games. They're coming. They're only 2 points behind the Nashville Predators now. And look, Sean, I mean, there's been so much talk about the top 3 teams in that division and the 2-3 matchup being the grinding matchup in that division and whatnot. If Dallas is going to make this bid and finish fourth, whoever finishes first does not get a free pass into the second round. With the way the Dallas Stars are coming right now, Tyler Seguin on the mend, Jason Robertson's been terrific, and a team obviously loaded with experience and hungry after losing in the Stanley Cup final last year. I mean, what do you make of what Dallas is doing right now?
Well, I make of what Dallas is doing exactly what I expected them to do. I mean, this is a playoff quality team. It's a team that proved everybody wrong last year by getting to the the Stanley Cup final. They fought through injuries. They fought through COVID. They have a ton of games left. I think it's 11 and 19 if we did our math right before the show started. But math has never been, I think, either one of our strong suits, which is why we went into journalism in the first place. But two things. One, I'm a little concerned. 11 games in 19 days after the grind they've been through is going to be tough. And if they make it, you know, what's left in the gas tank? And two, I think you're selling at least one of the teams they're chasing a little short. I'm not sure about Chicago. Look, they looked great last night. They don't want their season to end. They score 4 goals, you know, to come back against Nashville in a must-have game. They hadn't beaten them all year. But with the way that Nashville's playing right now, if they're in that 4 spot, I don't want to face them either. I don't think there's an easy 1-4 matchup anywhere, but I certainly don't think it's going to be in the Central if Nashville or Dallas make it. Like I said, I'm still not 100% sold on Chicago. I just don't know that they have enough horses. They certainly have Patrick Kane, and that helps a lot, but there's some questions other places. But for those other two teams, you know, and then you look at a team like Tampa, who's not playing well right now. They're not playing like the Stanley Cup champions. They're struggling. Hedman hasn't been as good as he's been all year. He's kind of ceding some ground, I think, in that Norris Trophy conversation with the way he's played in the last month. And, you know, I would never say anything bad about Victor Hedman behind his back, but Victor said it himself. So I feel pretty safe and that he's not going to come looking for me at any point when we finally are on the road again. You know, he hasn't been happy with the way he's played. Steven Stamkos is hurt. There's some concern that this is going to stretch into the playoffs. You know, it's a script that they followed before and they don't want to do it again, you know? So, and then you have, you know, Carolina and Florida who are just playing lights out. Like I still can't believe that Carolina isn't talked about as one of the 4 best teams in the league. They are. To me, there's no question they are. And people are still like, oh, look at that pesky Carolina team up near the top. I wonder when the brakes are going to fail and they're going to fall, you know, to the bottom floor. It's not happening. This is a big enough sample size where they're clearly among the best teams in the NHL right now.
Yeah, no question about it. Look, I kind of agree with everything you just said there. The only, like, regarding the Blackhawks, I do wonder, I mean, they're only 3 points back. They have 9 games left, but you're chasing two teams, and one of them has got 11 games remaining, as we talked about. I wonder if there's just enough runway there for them to catch two teams with only 9 games remaining. There certainly is mathematically, obviously, but it's a question, and they really had to scratch and claw, and they fought their way back, and they got that win. It was huge. I thought the missed point there for Nashville Wednesday night was, it was as big as the 2 points for the Blackhawks. I mean, you miss a point there with the way Dallas is playing, that's tough, especially when you have the big lead that you had and you give up the 3 goals in less than 3 minutes. That one was tough. Tampa, I'm not concerned about, to be honest with you. I'm not. The pedigree is there. They're struggling. I didn't expect any team this season to go through this entire season, even though it's a shorter season, just humming along with no problems at all. It's just too much. It's just too much of a grind this season to be able to do that. So they've hit a lull here. I think they've lost 8 of their last 14 games. You wonder about the, you know, is the wear and tear getting to Andre Vasilevsky a little bit too, without the firm backup goalie, as we see with some of these other contending teams. I mean, look at Carolina. They got 3, you know, Nedeljkovic has been great. Look at Florida. They now have 3 too. If you count Spencer Knight into the mix too. I know Chris Driedger's out a little bit. He got hurt, but you know, there comes Spencer Knight and he's been really good. So I wonder a little bit about that with Vasilevsky, but I'm not so alarmed or concerned necessarily with the Lightning. I think they'll be there and they'll be fine come playoff time. Doesn't mean they win, but they'll be a good team come playoff time. It's Dallas to me that has made the most noise, and the team that has jumped into my, you know, hockey watching conscious and all that stuff, the way they've played. Robertson's been terrific. And Sean, I think it starts a debate. The way Jason Robertson's playing, I think it starts a debate. Is he close, if not already has caught Kirill Kaprizov with the Minnesota Wild for the Calder? I mean, is he there? Do we look at that? I mean, you look at some of the numbers. I mean, Sean, he's right there with him.
And he's playing better.
Yeah.
Right now he's playing better. I mean, he's making that team go, and you talk about them winning and you talk about the pieces they're missing. Sagan, Radulov, you know, Hintz is
in and out. Yeah.
He's basically plastered together. Like, he never practices. He's held together by duct tape and who knows what else. And he goes out there and he plays like a whirling dervish during the games. But then, you know, every day is day to day. So, you know, they have some pieces missing and they needed somebody to step up. And you know, here comes Jason Robertson and he's on an absolute heater right now. You know, I think there should be a conversation about it. I just think Kaprizov was so good so early that he's got all the accolades, and you know, it's kind of hard to turn that ship midstream and say, you know, oh, maybe I'm going to go this other way, when he's been dominant for so long. So I think there should be a conversation. I don't know if it'll be as close as you or I think it's going to be, just because of the early voting that he was able to pile up, you know, with the way that he played in Minnesota. So but I think if you look at it empirically, this is a conversation that we should all be having, and good on him. You know, anybody that could challenge in a year like this, that's fantastic.
You know, you mentioned the numbers are what they are, and Kaprizov has 38 points, 19 goals and 19 assists in 45 games. Robertson now has 35 points. He's only 3 back and he's played 5 fewer games, 14 goals and 21 assists. But if you go back just to March 4th, when this real run started for Robertson and the Stars started to play a little bit better too, he's got 29 points in 28 games in that run. That's more points than Kaprizov, who's got 21 and 25 in that stretch. So the numbers are there for Robertson. He's playing very well, as you said. But here's the thing with Kaprizov, to me, that still pushed him over the top. I think you can make a soft case. I'm not saying a real strong case, but a soft case that he could be in the Hart Trophy conversation based on what he has done for that team this season. Whereas I'm not making that case for Robertson, you know, just because of the balance of the season. Look, the Wild are way better, I think, than any of us thought they were going to be. I think we thought they would be battling for fourth in that division. Now, St. Louis has fallen off a little bit, but Minnesota has continued to play well. You know, I watched them against Arizona. And again, we'll talk to Shane Doan from the Coyotes a little bit in a little bit here, but I watched them against Arizona last night. They didn't play great, but they end up winning 4-1. I mean, they just keep piling up these wins, and they're right there locked into third in that division. Better than I thought they'd be. And Kaprizov's been a huge reason why. So that's, to me, the reason why I still give him the edge. But Robertson's making a lot of noise, and he belongs in the conversation now. There's no question. Whereas I think a few weeks ago, there wasn't even a conversation.
Well, I think if he has a final 11 games like he's played, you know, what you just talked about in his last 28, I think that turns that conversation on its head. He gets that team into the playoffs when they were left for dead, you know. And who's been more important for them? I mean, that is a star-laden team, but who's driven the ship for the last 3 weeks? Every time you open a box score, every time you look at a headline on NHL.com, Robertson has 2 points. Robertson has 2 goals and an assist. Robertson has this. Robertson has that. Like, he's become a bona fide star on that team already, and to do it on a very veteran team, I think is as impressive as walking in and helping a team that has no expectations.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned Hintz before. He's kind of, you know, put together by duct tape at this point, but he's still got 13 points in his last 6 games as we talk right now on Thursday afternoon. Like, it's insane what the guy does. Now, also with Dallas, Tyler Seguin supposedly on the mend here, getting close to coming back. Jamie Benn's been terrific playing center, and it's a lot of games though. That's the question. We talked about it at the top here with the Stars and in this race in the Central Division. They have 11 games left in 19 days. They've already played a ton of games. I mean, just this month alone, I didn't even go back to March, but just this month alone, they played 12 games in 20 days. All right. So now, and then they were off yesterday. Today's April 22nd. So here comes a stretch where they play 11 in their last 19. Does it catch up to them? I mean, eventually, does it catch up to them? Especially, we talk about Roope Hintz. I mean, he's been terrific, but like you say, he's put together by duct tape.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of my concerns. And the one thing that alleviates it is their goaltending, right? Jake Ottinger's come out of nowhere. You want to talk about people that should be in the rookie race. There's two there, and maybe they split their vote, and that helps Kaprizov. But, you know, they're one of those dual goalie teams. You talked earlier about Vasilevsky and is the workload catching up to him. And, you know, I think that's a huge mistake that was made in that, you know, they didn't feel like they had another goalie that could play. Maybe Andre feels he should play every game. There's goalies that feel that way. Connor Hellebuck feels that way in Winnipeg, to mention one. And they just feel better if they play all the time. But with this kind of schedule and this kind of workload and the pressure that's going to be on the Stars for these last 11 games, I think it's such a luxury for Rick Bonus to have two goalies that he can really turn to. And Jake Ottinger let Anton Khudobin figure things out. He wasn't playing well earlier, and Bonus had the ability to say, okay, we'll go with Jake again. You go figure it out. You know, we can put Jake in. We feel comfortable with him. There's other teams that do not have that luxury, and goalies that haven't been able to figure it out because they just keep getting thrown to the wolves because they have to, and that hasn't happened in Dallas. So that's the one thing when I look at that I kind of feel like, okay, maybe it is Dallas. I think Nashville has a little of that in Pekarene and Saros. And then, you know, again, that's the question with Chicago. Subban's been okay for them, but they've really kind of ridden Lankin, and you wonder when that catches up to him.
Yeah, no, there's no question. They have ridden him, and they've ridden Vasilevsky too. But you talk about, Nedeljkovic has been terrific. He's on a personal 3-game winning streak where he's allowed 2 goals on 79 shots. So he's jumped up there where Mrazek was out. So they've got that going. Driedger allowed Bobrovsky to figure it out. And now Knight's going to step in that Driedger role. So it's a luxury to have. There's no question. Before we get to Shane Doan, I did also want to touch on the West here. I mean, Vegas clinches. They're the first team to clinch a playoff berth. I mean, they're a machine again. 8 wins in a row, 5-2 against the Sharks to clinch. In these 8 wins, they have a plus 20 goal differential, 34-14. They're averaging, Sean, almost 38 shots per game and giving up just like 25 per game. It's insane what this team is able to do. And they've taken advantage of Colorado not playing by jumping up and taking over first place in that division. The Avalanche have had some games postponed. They're back tonight, but now they've got a condensed schedule and Vegas has got a cushion.
Yeah, and Colorado can clinch tonight if they win. Mm-hmm. You know, so that tells you how close they are to each other. You know, look, and we were talking about trophies. You talk about Vegas. If Mark Stone isn't in the MVP conversation, we shouldn't have one.
Yeah. See, by the way, in this 8-game winning streak, he's got 12 points, 6 goals, 6 assists. Best stick in the game, you know, knocks down everything near him. Terrific defensive player and such a horse to handle offensively too. He's pretty much, you talk about like heartbeats of teams, you know, and the heart and soul of teams. That's kind of what I see Mark Stone. Yeah, I know he's the captain and he should be and all that, but every single night this guy is out there and nothing about his game is fancy, right? I mean, there is not one aspect of Mark Stone's game where you're saying, oh, that's a fancy little play that he made. What a skillful little play there. No, it's all will. Like everything about this guy's game is will, and he looks the part too. His hair's flying around, you know. He looks the part of a guy who just plays that type of will game, and he's really skilled to do it too.
I know you didn't mean to do this, but what a perfect segue into our first guest, our one guest in Shane Doan, who that's basically who you described when he played, right? Captain material, constant work ethic, driving a team, and now we have him.
Yeah, we have him. And now he's heard us talking so much about him. He must love to hear it. It's music to his ears, right? Shane, how are you, man? How's everything doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're very, very good. So you heard part of the conversation. What do you think of Mark Stone's game?
Absolutely love him. It's funny because I have a son who's 19 and that's who he patterns his whole game after. He's kind of a lankier kid that's, you would never say he's an amazing skater, but he's got unbelievable stick, knocks that just exactly that. And so we've been watching Mark Stone for the last few years. I got to play with Michael Stone and I love him. He's a great guy. So a huge, huge fan of what he does. And he's like the definition of a hockey player. Like just, I don't know. What do you need me to do? I'll do it. Like, tell me what you want. Oh, you want me to play the power play? Okay. I'll run the power play. I'll maybe be your best penalty killer. I'll be your best penalty killer. It's cool. I love him.
Well, and like we said, that was the way that you played the game. You did all those same things. So now you've kind of transitioned a little bit. I know, you know, you've done some things since you've been out of hockey and now you're back with the Coyotes, who are in the middle of a playoff race. And I'm wondering what it's like for you. Does it wake up a little of those competitive juices? You wake up every day in the middle of a playoff race and kind of feeling all that excitement again, as you did as a player, or is it different? Or
Well, it's definitely different, but the game against St. Louis kind of felt like a playoff game, and it was fun going to the rink. Like, we were playing St. Louis a couple of nights ago, and it felt like we had to win that game, and that was fun, and I enjoyed that and the opportunity to do that. It was nothing's like playing, but it's still fun. Yeah, I enjoy it.
You know, and Shane, I watched your team close last night, and I don't know that they could have played any better. I mean, they played so well. Talbot was great. But then it comes around to, like, can they take that step? Do you believe the group can take that step to really push in these last couple of weeks here and take away the Blues, like knock the Blues out of this thing and take that step if they play the way they did against the Wild last night? I know they didn't win, but it was a real strong game, and they were pushing and they were forechecking and they were aggressive and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Tuck has been playing unbelievable. The game last, I think we shot him 40 to 20.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
It was, and Kemps has been good for us. He's coming back. The two games he's played, he's been really good. But yeah, Talbot was incredible last night. I think that us and St. Louis is going to come right down to the end. I know that it's going to be probably a point or two here or there. And it would have been really nice to get a point last night, even if you didn't get two, to at least get one with that type of effort. So that was disappointing. Our guys are doing what they can right now, which is encouraging. Like they're fighting and battling through. Losing Connor Garland for the game last night hurt us a little bit. So we'll see if we can get him back. It's going to be a battle. Like, and that's, this is playoffs. Like, that's a part that we're kind of, you're watching your guys and you're seeing, okay, this is playoffs. Like, it started for us now to last night, or it started against St. Louis. Let's see how we play, how our guys respond, and keep going from there. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see what the final is.
I wanted to ask you a little bit. You brought up Connor, and when you watch him, to me, he's so entertaining to watch. He's not Mark Stone, as you just described Mark Stone, but he's one of those will guys that, you know, does all those things you need to do, takes the beating that needs to be taken to be around the net and to unsettle, you know, the opposing goalie or whatever needs to be done. When you watch him, is there a player he reminds you of that you played with?
Yeah, he's kind of like Gallagher a little bit, but probably a little bit more, handles a puck a little bit more, where Gally goes to the front of the net, but he's kind of got that tenacious take the puck in the face to score a goal like he did against Edmonton last year. Yeah. And then I don't think he's as quick. He's probably a cross between, because of their size, the two with Gallagher and Martin St. Louis, probably a cross in between those two guys, where St. Louis was always, Louis was just, he was the MVP of the league. So anyone being compared to him is always tough, but that type of style that can carry the puck and make plays and score goals, but at the same time has to be willing to go to the front of the net like Gallagher does. It's probably a combination of those two guys that, his personality is that way. Like, he's tenacious and he's not going to quit. And I love it. I love his personality and everything about him.
Yeah. He's a tough loss. If he's not going to be in the lineup, that definitely hurts you guys, because he does all those things that you just mentioned. I wanted to, and that kind of brings up this other point. So the trade deadline passes and the Coyotes were kind of quiet. I'm curious, how involved are you at all in decisions, made at that level, or, are you consulted? What's your role? Can you just describe your role now with that team?
Yeah. I work both on the hockey ops side and on the business side, probably a little bit of assistant on just both sides. Obviously Bill Armstrong, with his track record of everything that was in St. Louis, he's the general manager making all the decisions. Him and Brian Decore and Scotty Walker and the few guys on the hockey ops side have their war room. It's hard just this year because there's a bubble, you have to, if you're going to be on both sides, you're kind of out of the one a little bit more than on the hockey ops. But Bill's been great about texting and calling me and asking me for my opinion on certain situations. I've offered my opinion on others. And so it was, the trade deadline to come and go was involved in some of the talks, but that's part of the game that, it's hard to be kind of half in. You're either all the way in or all the way out. And I'm enjoying finding my way.
Man, Shane, you just mentioned all the people involved in kind of the management of the team. That's a rugged group you got there between yourself and Scotty and talk. Like, you guys could handle yourselves.
Well, all I know is that if I'm looking at that list, I'm probably third on it. So I'm comfortable. I'll take whoever's third on the other list. So it's funny. When you'd play, you'd always kind of go down the lineup and you'd be looking at seeing who's tough, who do you got to worry about? And then you're looking around the room and you're trying to gauge where you are on that list, so that, okay, how far down the list do I have to go before I'm in trouble? But yeah, Talk and Scotty are two guys that could handle themselves very well. Talk still scares me. So
yeah, you would you'd pick some favorable matchups, I think. But I'm curious. We were talking about the Stars a little bit before you came on, and they have a huge finishing kick that they have to go through to try and make the playoffs. And Dan and I, having never played beyond high school at the best, I don't know that we can answer this. What is this like for the players, right? You have, like, let's say for the Stars, you have 11 games and 19 days left. You got to try and get in. And then when you get in, you're in and you're like, hey, I can win this. And you got to play up to 28 games in 2 months. Like, how as a player do you segregate that and not say, oh my God, this is undoable?
Yeah. Well, when you start looking at the whole picture, I think that's intimidating. And you just got to convince yourself every day that you just got to win that next game. And I know that's like the biggest cliche of hockey players, and it's so annoying. But when you do look at it and you pull back and look and see, like, oh my gosh, we gotta play 11 games in 19 or whatever it is for them, 11 games in 19 nights. This is going to be a battle. And then that just gets us a chance. And every single one of them would be like, just give me a chance, man. Just let me get in. Once you get in, it's so funny when a young guy plays his first game in the NHL, it's amazing on how effective and how their enthusiasm carries them. And you're like, hey, this kid's going to be a player. Like, look at, did you see that kid play last night? He's unbelievable. And then three or four games later, it's kind of that enthusiasm is worn off. And you're starting to probably see a little bit more what the player is going to be. When you put veteran old players into the Stanley Cup playoffs, they become that young kid. Like, they're all of a sudden rejuvenated. They're that young kid that it's, you only get so many kicks at the can. And when it's gone, it's gone. So it starts, as you get older, you start to get more emotional and more intense. So just give me a shot. That's all they're thinking. Just give us one more shot. And obviously what Dallas did last year with Jamie Benn and some of their veteran guys being so close, they just wanted another shot. Just give, and that's going to push them. And I'm excited to see how they handle that. And I can be a fan now because they're in our other division. They don't have any effect on us. By all means, win as many games as you can, guys.
And as you get older, I'm curious, I mean, did you become more of a standings watcher too, especially at around this time of the year within the regular season where it's down, it's past the trade deadline and the playoff races are really heating up. Were you a standings watcher? And do you think more guys are, even if they don't admit it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
My son was older at the time, like he's 19 now. So he was like watching it at the end of my career with me, and he's the biggest hockey nerd you'll ever meet in your life. So it was impossible for him and I not to be discussing the standings and what our chances were and how we were doing. So for sure I was. And it's amazing on how momentum is real. Like that positive momentum, like Dallas is starting to feel their mojo. Man, that can, you can run with that. It can carry you. You get on the right side of it, and all of a sudden it just kind of becomes a life of its own. And vice versa. If you get on the wrong side of it, it's like you're squeezing your stick a little harder. You just can't quite make that simple play that you need to make to get the puck out or to find a way on a breakaway. You miss the net, and it's just a little bit harder. And so Dallas getting that mojo, it's going to be a battle right to the end.
Shane, I got to ask you, you mentioned your son a couple of times, and I know, especially this summer, but even in the past, I mean, you've been around Austin Matthews for so long coming out of Arizona, and what he's doing this year. I mean, we all knew that he was an impact player, that he was going to be one of the best players in the league, but have you seen something different from him this year? And did it show this summer?
Yeah, everyone can say what they want about how great they think he is because he's amazing, but watching him shoot a puck this summer, and he skated with us. There was like him and Connor McDavid and Matt Dumba and Jake Bean and Galchenyuk. And we had a pretty good group skating here for most of November and December. And I was skating with them, and we were laughing and talking about, man, does he have a shot at getting 50 this year? Like, he shoots a puck so well, it's unbelievable. Like, I've never been in a practice with Ovi. I've been in a practice with a lot of great NHL players and seen guys that can really shoot the puck. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone shoot the puck like he does. And he has zero remorse for shooting high and trying to score, which a lot of guys, it's like a cold-bloodedness, which I love. I don't think I could do it. Like, he hit Peter Budaj one because Peter would come out and they'd shoot on him. And Peter was playing amazing after being with those guys for 2 months. He hit Peter Budaj in the head with a one-timer from, I'd say, 25 feet away. And I thought he might have killed Petey. And Austin was like, oh, sorry, Petey. And then Austin's other answer was, it was going to hit the net. So your job is to stop the puck. So that's kind of what you... But that cold-blooded kind of shoot it to score every single time, it translates. Because you'll see guys that come down the ice in practice and they kind of slow down and they half shoot it and goalie makes this. He does not have that in his game for 1 second. It is every single time he gets a puck, he wants to score. So I'm not saying like, oh, yeah, you're a genius. Austin Matthews is a great player. That's not what I'm saying. But it was prevalent and obvious this summer or this fall that he was going to, we thought, like we joked about, could he get 50? I don't know if he can, but he's pretty special.
Yeah. The only thing I think of with that entire story, it's a great story, is what's wrong with Peter Budaj to go out
and
to face these guys voluntarily?
I know. And Petey was unbelievable. Like all of those guys were just peppering him. And he was just, it was unbelievable. Like the shot that hit him in the head, it stopped everyone. Like it was a little 3-on-3 game in the half zone. Like it wasn't even a full ice. And he hit Petey in the head in the half zone. So you realize how close he was. It was unreal. And it was just, and Petey was awesome about it. And Austin was awesome about it. But it was just like, it was hitting the net. Like I'm trying to score. And Petey hadn't been scored on. That was probably a little bit of it too. Was Petey hadn't been scored on in that entire skate. So he was, Austin was trying to find a way to score.
Two things I thought about was, it was a good thing it wasn't somebody like Ron Hextall who was the goalie.
Oh, Rashawn Burke. Burke and I fought in practice twice because of stuff like that. So he scared me. Burke, I realized that was a terrible idea. No more doing that. So
after the second time. The other thing is, I hope everybody bought Petey a lot of beer.
Yes, they took care of him. They took care of Petey.
Oh, man. Yeah, I would imagine they'd have to. Absolutely. So you got a new job now, too. So you're not just working with the Coyotes. Now you're working with Hockey Canada. Tell us a little bit about this one. You're going to be an assistant GM with Team Canada for the World Championships. Roberto Luongo is the GM. So how are you and Roberto going to work together? How's this going to work out?
It's been great. We've been talking actually the last few days. We had a call this morning with Scotty Salmon and just kind of went over with a few of the other guys to go over everything. It was exciting and kind of piecing everything together. Obviously, it's going to be unique with the whole situation of COVID. But at the same time, if it was going to be easy, everyone would be doing it. So the challenge is kind of what makes it exciting. Louis's amazing. I'm a huge Luongo fan. Him and I got to play together a few times. We got to be roommates a couple times. And he's just, I love his mind and the way he thinks and his approach and his demeanor. And he's just somebody that I'm really excited to get a chance to work with. Him and Scotty Salmon, who's incredible. So
the room will certainly be loose.
Yeah, Louis is comfortable and as competitive as a man as you'll ever meet. Like, I don't care if you're playing two touch against him. I don't care what you're doing with him. If you're playing poker, if you're playing anything, I mean, ultra, ultra competitive, but balances that with that kind of absolute perfect delivery on the dry, dry one-liner. Like his ability to lighten a room is really big. I won the world championships with him when he came in and he came in halfway through the third period. Or halfway through the second period, we're up 4-0 on the checks, and Sean Burke got hurt, and he had to come in and play. They were flying, and he held it together. We won that game, and then he beat Sweden in the final. He just is a competitive guy. He always, when you call on him, he answers a bell, and I loved his mental makeup of a player, and he's brought that kind of into the management side where he's so confident and calm and composed, and you feel better when you're around him.
And how, so the task, you mentioned this though, the task is different this year because of what's going on around us with COVID and the pandemic and whatnot. I've heard some things where Canada could be a younger team because our guy's going to want to leave their families and all this stuff, right? Who knows, but what's the scouting like now in terms of trying to build this team? Do you look younger? I mean, do you look for the younger guys? Do the younger guys who want to push and are going to want to keep going here after, you know, this quick 56 game season?
Yeah, I think there's probably a balance of both. Definitely Canada always. I won the world championships the one year. We had Jonathan Toews and Jordan Staal. Johnny had never even played a game in the NHL. And Jordan Staal just finished his first year. We had a bunch of young guys on the team. You usually have that mix. It's nice to have some veteran guys that kind of drive the way for you. And we're going to probably look for that balance. Those guys, putting on Team Canada's jersey is so special. And one of the best advice I ever got was from Sean Burke. He said, one day you're going to want to play and no one's going to want you on their team. So when Team Canada asks, that's pretty special. And there's going to come a day when you're like, you know what, I would love to go over and play and represent Team Canada, and no one's going to want you on their team. So take advantage of every chance you get. is something that for me was a huge benefit. Obviously, I missed the playoffs too many times, so I got to do it. I got to do it too often, but it also created incredible relationships. The fact Louis and I are getting to do this together is because, you know, I said yes to going over to play in the Worlds. I got to meet all kinds of incredible men and become friends with them. And so that's kind of on top of the fact you're representing the greatest hockey country in the world, you get a chance to meet all the greatest players in the world too and become friends with them.
So you have to be honest now, Shane. Have you sent Louis the tapes from November and December so you can play for Team Canada this year if they're a little short?
You know, the only tape I think there is of me getting hit in the face with a puck and breaking my nose again. Like, it was so stupid, but I realized I'm a coach, so I got to be on the outside watching. So
it's a good place to be when Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid are on the same ice together. Get off, let them do their thing.
Quickly change. That's my advice. So guys would ask what to do. I was like, get off, like quickly get off the ice. Like those guys don't want to be on the ice because they make everyone look silly.
What a great experience for your son, though.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. He actually missed it a little bit. Like, he was skating with them. He skated with Austin, but when he went to play in the USHL, mm-hmm. and it was like 4 days later, Connor came down, and he's like, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding? Like, he's as big a fan of the NHL as anybody in the world. So, but Austin has been incredible to him, and Connor and Maddie and those guys. Matty Dumba was awesome. They were all the NHL guys. Anthony Duclair was there too. We had a bunch of guys. It was a lot of fun.
Well, you were incredible to us, giving us this much time, Shane. Really do appreciate it. Thank you so much. And hey, the Coyotes are in a playoff race. Enjoy it, right?
Hey, we're playing playoff games right now. We got to win the next one for sure. There's no way you can get around that. So we got to win.
Sean, you called it. He's an all-timer. Just the best. You know, that was a lot of fun. Great catching up with him. And he believes, I mean, hey, the Coyotes are in a race. He's excited about it. Does anybody want fourth in that division though, Sean? Does anybody want fourth in that division?
Did you not listen to the interview that we just had?
I'm just kidding.
Just give me a chance.
Just give him a chance.
You know what? Vegas got knocked out last year. They were pretty good. Colorado got knocked out last year. They were pretty good.
Yeah.
Just give him a chance. It's a 7-game series. Somebody gets hurt. Goalie gets on a heater. Things change really quickly. So, yeah, somebody wants that fourth spot.
Somebody does. The Coyotes, look, again, like I said, I watched them play against Minnesota Wednesday night. They were really good. They just couldn't score. Cam Talbot was really good. They keep playing like that. They're going to pile up some more points, and they're going to stay right in this race. So that is going to be interesting to see. And by the way, so let's talk about this too. You asked him about Austin Matthews, and I'm so happy you did because he had some great stories to tell there. But the Toronto Maple Leafs are struggling right now, right? In that North Division, they're in first place. Okay, they're in a good spot. But as we speak now on Thursday afternoon, they're winless in 5 straight, 0-3-2. The power play remains a problem, as it's been for a very long time right now. Hyman is out with a knee injury. Bogosian's out, and Freddie Anderson remains out. And now all of a sudden, after Jack Campbell was, you know, the star of the town and star of the league, now they may have a goaltending issue again. Do you think they do?
Well, I do. I think if you don't have a good goalie, if you don't have a number one, you don't have
a
goalie.
Yeah.
Right. And look, Jack played great. The Maple Leafs played great in front of him during that run.
Yes.
When he didn't lose for, what was it, 10, 11 straight starts to start his Toronto career. That was a really good Toronto team in front of him, especially defensively. They have not been the same team. David Rittich, who's come over, hasn't been good in the couple of starts he's made. He's left some really bad rebounds.
The goals he allowed the other night, some of them were, I mean, that was just, they're just bad goals. There's no beating around it. They were just bad goals that he allowed the other night in that loss, you know, to Vancouver.
Yeah, and I don't know that those are games you can lose, right? You get Vancouver coming back from a huge long layoff, half decimated team. Some guys still couldn't play. Other guys were just coming back, and they lost late. Like, if you're going to lose to Vancouver, they come out and they're fired up, right? Oh, and they put 6 behind you really fast, and then they hang on to win. That's not a team coming back from COVID that's built to win in the third period. You know, they're not in 45 game shape. They've right. lost a lot of that. So that was concerning to me. You know, the goaltending certainly is a problem. I think at this point, I don't know if Freddie Anderson is the guy, even when he comes back, that you know, if you put the goalies in tiers, he's not a top tier goalie. And he might be, Toronto might have the worst goaltending in that division.
It's possible, especially, you know, I mean, the way Mike Smith has played for Edmonton, he's been very good. Obviously, we know what Connor Hellebuck can do. We know what Carey Price, when healthy, can do. He hasn't done it consistently, but we know what he can do with Jake Allen. Then you look beyond that. Calgary's got Markstrom, and Vancouver has Demko and Holtby. And Vancouver's not out of it yet. It's a long haul to get back in it for them, and that's going to be a real tough road to hoe for them. But they're not out of it yet. They're not done yet. They, you know, what a terrific, what an amazing story that would be, by the way, if they came all the way back. But Toronto sits there in first place. And another thing that mystifies me about the Toronto Maple Leafs is their power play. They've scored power play goals in the last two games. They scored one power play goal in the previous 17 games. One for 42 with that talent. How is that even feasible? How is that possible when you can roll Matthews and Marner and Nylander and Tavares and Riley and Hyman when healthy and all out on the power play and Thornton? I mean, good God, how do you go 1 for 42? I don't understand that.
Because you get on the wrong side of the momentum. You really didn't listen to Shane. You get on the wrong side of the momentum and it's not rolling and you're squeezing your stick and you're, oh my God, we're 0 for 27 and Mike Zeisberg is going to ask me about it. And then Kevin McGrann's going to ask me about it. And now I'm 0 for 32 and that's how it happens.
I guess.
And then that we might, in 2 weeks, we may reconvene and they'll be 14 for 28 on the power play.
I don't, maybe they have the talent to be, but also right now in this 5-game winless streak, they can't keep the puck out of the net on the penalty kill either. Only 50% in this 5-game winless streak. So they got issues. There's no question about it. They're in a good spot. Obviously they played themselves into a really good spot, and maybe this is just a slump. This could just be a slump, but with the goaltending issues there, and we don't know about Freddie Anderson still, Jack Campbell has come back down to earth, and David Rittich just has not started well there in Toronto. There are goaltending issues that are not going away for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they may need to score a power play goal or two to get away, to get over the hump for the rest of this season.
And can you imagine if their goaltending isn't good and they draw Edmonton?
Yeah. I mean, Montreal would be a better draw, obviously, for that. But yeah,
even Winnipeg, because Winnipeg doesn't score at the same rate, they play a far better brand of defense and they have the better goaltender. So that's a problem. But I'm just imagining, you know, as a coach with your fingers crossed every day, you know, doing the eeny, meeny, miny, mo, who am I going to pick to be my goalie? And then saying, okay, you're my choice. Now here comes.
Yeah.
The cast of characters that all they do is score. And I'm so torn about Edmonton. You know, we did the Super 16 this week and I read in a couple of places, you know, after kind of a bad start, I think, you know, over their last 40 games, they're like the third best team in the NHL. I still don't buy it. Like I don't know what it is about them that I don't buy, but I don't, but clearly they've been as good, if not better than Toronto, over the last month for sure.
Well, I know why you're not buying it, because they're still driven by two players, right? I mean, that's why you're not buying it, because when you get to the playoffs, you can't be driven by two players. But to get to the playoffs, they're 9-2-2 in their last 13. And here's a stat that it jumped out to me, you know, as the balance of the season, you forget certain things and results. They've won 5 of 7 against Winnipeg. They're 5-2 against the Winnipeg Jets, who is a team they definitely could face in the first round of the playoffs too, Edmonton right there. So they have success against Winnipeg, but again, they're driven by two players. And shutting down Connor McDavid is very, very challenging. It's not, you know, I understand that, but in the playoffs, you can't just have two guys going and expect to win. Though Mike Smith has been way better than I would have given Mike Smith the credit of being at the start of the season or even halfway through the season. He's been really good.
Yeah. And look, they're two players, but they're starting to develop, supporting cast, right? I mean,
they need to.
Bryant, Nugent, Hopkins when he's healthy, Pujarvi.
Yeah.
They got a couple of pretty good defensemen too.
Nurse is terrific.
Yeah. He's on the outskirts of the Norris conversation to me. Like, that's how good he's been. So they have more pieces than they've had in the past. I think they have, you know, a coach that can make them dangerous in the playoffs, but I guess it's just the past. Like, it just sits with me, and I'm not buying this team. But then why am I buying Winnipeg? Like, it's the run to the Western Conference Finals a couple of years ago, and they're clearly not the same team.
Look, there's other things we want to get to. I want to talk about the East, and we'll hit on the GM meetings from yesterday. But you bring up Winnipeg. All season long, they are, of teams I can't figure out, they're at the top of the list. I can't figure them out. They're good some nights. Hellebuck can be great some nights. Defensively, they're okay with what they have. But some nights they play really good. Some nights they don't. I cannot. They have terrific offensive players. I can't figure out the Winnipeg Jets. Like, I just, all season long, they've been the team that mystifies me the most.
And you know what I'd love to see? I would love to see Nick Ehlers go on a long, long playoff run. Like, he's one of those kids that just gets no respect. He's so fun to watch. And you know, the matchups against Toronto have been ridiculous with him and Austin going back and forth. And, you know, just, you do this and then I'll do this. And, you know, on all the stars that Winnipeg has, all those offensive stars, and they have a few, you know, Connor, Wheeler, all those guys, Shifley, like, he's special.
He's good. He's very good. All right. So I mentioned the East. Sean, MassMutual East Division. Washington, the Islanders, Pittsburgh, and Boston. That's how the order is, 1 through 4, as we speak today. Washington and the Islanders are tied atop the division, 62 points in 46 games. And just so happened that they play their next 3 games against each other. So we'll figure something out there. Pittsburgh's got 61 in 46, and Boston has won 5 in a row, 58 points in 44. Who's the best team in the division?
The bottom two are the best two.
Yeah.
And I was really down on Boston. If you go back and you look through Super 16s for a couple of weeks, Boston went from very high to very low. And part of that was Tuukka was out. They're decimated with injuries. Their defense, they were running kids out on defense that were barely playing for their Providence team. And they had to use them because they were so hurt. But now they're starting to get on the right side of things, right? Tuukka's come back. He's been great. You know, Swayman has been unbelievable as he's come up and kind of taken that Halak role, and now Halak's coming back. And they've done all this without Pasternak scoring. He's in a horrible slump. You know, it's almost mystifying when you talk about things that are mystifying. The fact that
time that word has been used, by the way,
the fact that David Pasternak can't score goals is probably because we're working on a feature on him, and it's the NHL.com
the
first.
It goes.
But yeah, so I like them, and then I've always liked Pittsburgh, and I think they've found the right mix. And I say that, and then they give up 6 goals against
against
the New Jersey Devils in a period, and they still win. So they have that going for them, but it's tough to be a playoff team and give up 6 goals against a team that can't make the playoffs.
Yeah. So I'll throw out some stats at you. For the longest time, I was saying the Islanders are the best team in the division because the goaltending to me is the stablest Rask is terrific, obviously, but he's been in and out of the lineup. So for the longest time, I just thought the goaltending made the biggest difference. They had the fewest glaring holes. But then I looked up some numbers against the other 3 teams that are at the top of the division. Pittsburgh is 12-5-1 against Washington, Boston, and the Islanders. And the Bruins are 10-6-4 against the Penguins, the Islanders, and Caps. The Islanders are just 9-9-2 against the others, and Washington's 8-7-3. So you say the bottom two of third and 4, Pittsburgh and Boston, as we stand today. And I'm now going to agree with you. Like, I just look at those numbers, and they've won the most games against the best in that division. And Pittsburgh, especially with the 12 wins there against the other teams, the top teams in that division. And what's stopping the Pittsburgh Penguins now from winning the division? I mean, Pittsburgh, they're only 1 point back. They got the Devils, and they have 6 of their 10 games left are against the Devils, the Flyers, and the Sabres. They also do play Washington and Boston, but 6 of the 10 are against teams that are, you know, don't have much to play for right now.
Yeah, and when I look at the teams, for me, the Islanders, like, who are you afraid of?
Of the Islanders? Their
goaltending's really good, but, you know, goaltending tends to be really good in the playoffs, and playoffs tend to be 2-1, 3-2 games, and it's always a one-goal game. Like, you look at every one of those other teams, and you're afraid. Guys come over the boards. Well, yeah. Crosby comes over the boards. You're like, uh-oh. And now Jeff Carter comes over the boards. Malkin, when he gets healthy, comes over. Like, there's guys that legitimately petrify you. I think, you know, the perfection line in Boston is the same. Ovi, Backstrom, those guys are terrifying. To me, it's Barzal. And then
I'm afraid of getting hit by Ryan Pulak's shot, but beyond that.
But so. can you shut everybody else down? Like, and I love Palmieri, and I think he's going to be one of the best trade deadline acquisitions of them all when it's over. But it seems to me, and I could easily be proven wrong, as I have been 9,000 trillion times in my life, but it seems to me that they're relatively easier to match up against than any other team.
Well, there's the other way to look at it. The devil's advocate way to look at it is they're so good in finding matchups that they will – the guys that you mentioned that you're scared of, they do a really good job of shutting players like that down.
Yeah. So that's what they did to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily that they want you to be scared of Barzal. It's they want you to know that JG Pageau is there and he's going to shut you down, or that fourth line with Cizikas and they can shut you down and whatnot. And that's, I think, what they do so well, which is why they have a chance against anybody in that division. If again, in Boston, if you shut down Marchand or in Bergeron and Pasternak, hard to do, you can easily beat the Bruins, right? Well, I shouldn't say easily, but you can beat the Bruins. In Washington, you shut down Ovechkin, you shut down Backstrom, gives you a much better chance, by the way, obviously. In Pittsburgh, you know, with that, if Malkin's not going to be at 100%, it obviously makes it a little easier to do. So none of these things are easy to do, but the Islanders have found a way to do it, and they've found a way to do it very well. So that's the devil's advocate argument, that you're not scared of anybody on that team, but you should be scared of the way they play against you.
Yeah, and someday I'll learn to not go against Lou and Barry.
Yeah, well, just
I do. You know, eventually with the Devils, I learned early on when I started covering them, you know, in the mid 90s when they started to get good, you know, in 94 and 95, I'm like, oh, they're going to lose to this team. They're going to lose to that team. And then they never did. And you're like, okay, now I believe. And I guess I just need to get to the same place with the Islanders. And it's a different history, right? And yeah. I guess they're building the same kind of history there. So we'll see.
We'll see. All right. So a couple of news and notes before we get out of here. Obviously, the Colorado Avalanche back tonight after their COVID protocol, 3 games postponed, tacked on later on, schedule changed around. And the GMs met virtually. That's so sad, by the way.
I miss Boca.
I miss that trip. That's one of the greatest, the best trips of the year. That's just a personal thing. I know nobody else cares. Nobody's going to feel sympathy for me on that one.
Dan, I am so hungry right now for Rocco's Tacos. It's not even funny.
It's the best. I miss that trip. I was so mad early March that we didn't get that trip. But they met virtually yesterday, Wednesday, to go over a bunch of different topics. And I guess the most newsworthy items for fans that came out of that were the target dates for next season: September 22nd for the start of training camp, October 12th for the start of the regular season, which is not much later than it normally would be. But those are not official. They're just target dates that they're looking at. Obviously, a lot of this is subject to change with what happens, you know, over the course of the summer and whatnot. But this is what they're looking at. So I think it's optimistic that I think we all should be optimistic that they're looking at target dates in you know, mid to late September and, you know, around mid-October to start it and get an 82-game season in.
Yeah, no, and it's always good to have dates and to figure it out. And, you know, Bill Daly also said that the league continues to talk about the Olympics and what's going to happen with that, and that's going to impact the schedule and all of that. So, you know, there wasn't a ton of news, but any news about next season is very welcome at this point.
Yeah, and you know that if they do go to the Olympics, that the schedule gets more condensed. So if they're starting October 12th, they probably would have preferred to start around October 2nd or October 3rd in an Olympic year. So you're missing that extra week and a half that you got to condense it, maybe to get elongated at the end We'll see. But that Olympic conversation is ongoing. I know a lot of fans thought when they came, they announced the CBA and the Olympics were in it, that it was a guarantee. It was never a guarantee. It was had to be a negotiation with the International Olympic Committee and the IIHF. And that continues to go on right now. But again, the IOC is focused also on the games coming up too. So it's hard to plan for down the road when they just got to focus on what's happening for the here and now. But that conversation is ongoing, Bill Daly said. And we love Olympic hockey when the NHL is involved, and we can be hopeful that they go, and we'll see. If not, we get a great NHL season either way.
There's no losing in this.
No, no losing at all. Well, we thank Shane Doan. Sean, he was terrific. Really happy we were able to catch up with him, and he's got a job to do now with Team Canada to pick for the World Championships, and the playoff races carry on. A lot of hockey action coming at you every night, and we'll be back again next week. You excited for this? Here we go. Oh, he's holding up his finger and he's saying, hold on.
Hold on before we go.
Okay.
We hold a lot of people accountable on this podcast.
Don't hold me accountable.
When players are playing bad, we're the first ones to point it out and say how bad they are and everything else. So before we go, I need to make an apology. Because last week in the wilds of trade deadline, or 2 weeks ago in the wilds of trade deadline, because it was a long time between our podcast, because we did Monday and now we're doing Thursday. I made a huge mistake on the podcast that was pointed out by a loyal listener. And I need to apologize to Matthias Janmark.
Yes.
Who I called a Finn.
Yes.
And he's a Swede. And there's probably not a worse mistake that you could make. As I explained to my wife when she asked why I was so upset, I would be like, it would be like my friends at NHL.com calling me a Canadian. It's the same kind of thing. There's a lot of national pride involved, and you know, I did it, and I'm glad somebody held me accountable for it. And so I'm using this public forum to apologize and to Matthias and say that I'm sorry. And then the other thing, just to clear up something, you know, we spoke to Shane Doan and he was great, talked a lot about his son. We never mentioned who his son was. So his son is Josh Doan, and he plays for Chicago, like Shane said, and he has had an unbelievable year. But I just wanted, in case anybody wants to follow, Shane's son is Josh, and they can follow this year at the draft when it comes up virtually in June and see if he gets taken or not.
Yeah, and I hope he does. And Shane's right, though, right? I mean, if you don't, you're still at a future ahead of you. You might still have a future ahead of you. There's a lot of players in the NHL who are like that. But Sean, I love the public apology. You're owning up to it. I think it's great. And by the way, I didn't catch it. I would have stopped you right then and there if I had caught it. I didn't catch it, so I guess I could apologize for that as well. But this was a lot of fun. We thank Shane Doan, and more hockey to come, Sean. We'll be back next week.
Yeah, and in between now and next week, I'm going to work on my tiki bar for the playoffs.
There you go. Enjoy, and everybody stay safe out there.